Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug deep and laid a foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck the house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete.
But I really wanted to talk about how we place so much value in these things, don't we? You know, they're items that we probably see every day, or a lot of us use all these things every day, but we really put so much emphasis on these items. We live in such a commercial society. And I've called my talk today Disposable Culture. So I just want us to think about, you know, the things we place value on and what sort of part do they hold in our lives. But these days it feels like so many things are designed to break. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I find it's often easier and actually cheaper as well to go online to read some reviews and then order a new product instead of repairing the one that's broken. One of the most obvious cases of this idea of disposable culture I find around me is what's called fast fashion. Have you heard that phrase, fast fashion? In the summer of 2019, so the summer that's just passed, there was a survey done on behalf of Barnardo's charity. And they said in the UK alone, this isn't global, this is just in the UK, there was £2.7 billion spent on outfits that would only be worn once. £2.7 billion. I don't know if that fact's true or not, but it's what Barnardo's said. And the worst culprits were people who are going to weddings. Wedding guests were spending an average of £79.76 on a new outfit, which would only be worn once. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But we've probably all done it ourselves. So to me, that's disposable culture. People live very much for the short term. And I was thinking about this the week. It's certainly true for my generation of people living short term. This week, I was lucky enough to celebrate my third wedding anniversary, and that was on Tuesday. On a Monday night, I was in the gym, and I was talking to one of my friends in the gym, and he said, are you coming to train tomorrow night at class? And I said, I can't. I'm going out for a meal with my wife. It's our wedding anniversary. And the look on his face, he's like, it was a mixture of like confusion and disgust. He's like, what? Like, you're married? Like, he couldn't believe that I was married. Like, I don't know. Well, maybe I should have thought about that. Maybe he was just surprised that I was married. But I think it was more of a, it said more to me about my generation that no one gets married anymore. And the Daily Telegraph wrote an article at the end of last year, at the end of 2018, where the headline was, divorce rates in UK have fallen to the lowest level since 1972. And that might seem like a positive headline. We might think, oh great, the divorce rates are at the lowest since 1972. But then if you went on to read the first paragraph, it says the average marriage in the UK now lasts 12.2 years, which to me is a pretty miserable statistic. And I don't need to say much about generation rent. Where I live in London, it's the case for pretty much everyone we know. Young people just can't afford to buy their houses anymore. So we live in a world controlled by rich landlords. Everything's short term. Everything's a quick fix. Everything's disposable. Okay? So that's where I want to be going today. And that led me to the question, you know, what structures do we build our lives upon? What structures do we build our lives upon? And an analogy that I like to think about in my work, when I'm working with people who are in prison or recently released from prison or who are sleeping rough on the streets or who are in temporary accommodation, is to think about the structures of their lives, because it helps as a good starting point when we're trying to help them move forward and also to introduce the gospel to them. So you might like to imagine the analogy of your life is like a web of, like, if you imagine the fingers are different threads, they're all holding your life together, okay? And each thread represents a different aspect of your life. It could be your job, your family, your friends, your physical health, your mental health, your home, your hobbies, social life, your physical fitness, your sleeping patterns, your bank account. I could go on and on and all. Each of those is a thread that holds the structure of your life together. Does that make sense? Okay. And if you have several of these threads, even two or three of those things that are secure and strong, it could seem like your life is pretty well together. You're a pretty sorted guy and you're in good order. You're doing well. But I'm sure we all know what happens if just one of those threads comes loose or is taken away. And when Jesus was speaking in Luke chapter 6, the passage we had read to us earlier, he was talking to his disciples, and I think he was talking about exactly the same thing. And he was asking the most important questions. You know, what is your life built upon, and will it stand when the storms of life come? And for a lot of the people that Caris and I work with on a daily basis and try and support and love, at the best of the times, the web that they have, the structure of their life, is not a very sound one. It's not a very strong one to begin with. And this is normally a combination of things that are out of their control. That could be situations that they either inherited or were born into, or suffering under an oppressive society, or just never having any opportunities to succeed. And also, it's a mixture of that and some terrible decisions they've made throughout their lives. So the structures of their life are probably unemployment, no contact with family, nowhere to live, or often worse than having nowhere to live is living somewhere where you're not safe, where you're suffering abuse. I know many people who just don't want to go home. They've been placed somewhere to live, either in a hostel or a shared house by the council, and they don't want to go home at night because they're not safe there. They live in fear. They could have no friends other than people who want to manipulate and abuse them. They could have very poor mental health consistently. They could have no money at all. So this is not a solid place to start from, not a very solid structure. And then on top of that, the storms of life come along. Sickness, anxiety or stress, rejection, false accusations, loneliness, even imprisonment. When you get those storms thrown at you, will everything ravel entirely? And this is the reality for so many people. We made a friend recently at church who was coming along. He was living in a local hostel because he'd just been released from prison. So he had to spend a period of time living in this hostel. And he was introduced by another friend to come along to our church. And it was wonderful because we became good friends very quickly with this guy. But he was living on a curfew. And in his past, he'd had issues with alcohol and drugs. And he went out drinking one night and broke his curfew. And basically, after only being out of prison for, you know, a few months, he got recalled, which was quite a harsh decision to make on this guy. All he'd done was miss his curfew, and he got thrown back in prison for another 8 months, which was very harsh. And when he got recalled, we had been praying and praying. We said, Lord, please let him get sent back to Pentonville, because that's the prison we work in, so at least we'd be able to still have contact with him. And we went into Pentonville the next week, and thank God he was there. He'd never been to this jail before, so it was a big answer to prayer. He was there. And this guy, when he'd been in prison before, had lost his mother. She had died while he was in prison. He wasn't allowed to go out to the funeral. And he had never had any counselling or bereavement support at all. And it had really hit him hard. He'd never really recovered from this. He had young children, and his partner had moved on while he was in prison. Had found a new partner, and he wasn't allowed to see his kids. And he'd never really dealt with that very well. And he was in so much pain and trauma that he'd never processed. And then he got thrown back in prison again. And it was very hard for us to take, because we thought in the church community, when we were meeting with him and he was coming to church, he was starting to heal a little bit and it was going well. And then he got thrown back in jail. And when he ended up back in prison, he was getting bullied. He had been, you know, badly abused and beaten physically by officers one day, and that kind of hurt him really badly. And then his cellmate was a drug user in the prison, and he had racked up a whole load of debt, which our friend inherited, and people were trying to get that money. And everything just was going so badly, and you'd think, this guy is just going to crumble. These are the storms of life I'm talking about. And he already didn't have a very solid structure underneath that. Wasn't allowed to see his family or his kids. Didn't really have any friends on the outside. But the funny thing was, this guy had decided he wanted to follow Jesus at some point along the line since we met him. And he had started reading the Bible, and he had really fallen in love with Jesus, and he'd experienced the Holy Spirit. And he had friends in the prison who were Christians who were supporting him. And strangely enough, he has said to us this week, he was one of the four that Keith and Jill were talking about that got baptized this week. And he said that he's doing so well, he's doing the best he's done in his life, and he's walking out his Christian life. And he's got another 6 months in prison, but he's doing really well. So my point is, often when the kind of the structures, the storm are not that steady, when the storms of life come, but you've got Jesus, I think that's what he was talking about. Things can stand. And for him, it's holding up. So the question for our own lives and for those that, you know, we're trying to minister to and share love with, how can we build a strong foundation? So I've got slides I should be using here. I quite like that image. And some of you might remember, does anyone know the name of this game? What was it called? Kerplunk. Life is like a big game of Kerplunk. That's, if you remember anything from today, that's probably what you remember. Life is a big game of Kerplunk. So, yeah, it's like I said, for our friend, you know, his straws the holding the marbles up weren't very strong at all. He only had a couple of straws holding it together. But it didn't matter. He had Jesus and everything's staying strong. How can we build a strong foundation when the reality of our life looks like that isn't possible? So Jesus says for us to build a strong foundation, and he says this very clearly. There's no messing about with Jesus' words here. It's not one of those Bible passages that we need to debate or argue over. It's very clear. He says we need to listen to his words and put them into practice. He's very clear about that. So what I'd like to do with the rest of our time is suggest three ways that we can do this in our own lives. And we've had to get quite creative with this. Working in a prison, you have to kind of think on your feet a lot. So we've got quite creative with how people can put the words of Jesus into practice. So maybe you can apply some of this yourself, or maybe you're in context with people that you're reaching out to that you can use some of these ideas with. And then we can all end up looking like this. I love that image as well. When the storms of life come, are we going to hold firm? So the first one, of course, that Jesus says is get into it. Get into the word. That means, in my opinion, is read it, absorb it, memorize it, spend time with it. Get some structure to how you read it. We've started a group in the prison last year, and we call it Alpha Plus. Well, the guys actually named it Alpha Plus. Do most people here know about the Alpha course? So we run an Alpha course in HMP Pentonville, and we have been doing for many years, and we get so many people come through that. You know, there's probably, I'd say, hundreds of different people do it each year, the Alpha course. But within that group, we noticed there was a group of maybe four or five lads who had come to faith and who had made that positive decision. Yes, I want to follow Jesus. I want to turn my life around. I want to go a bit deeper. But the Alpha course, they were kind of just doing it over and over again. And in prison, it gets a bit weird. The conversation groups each week normally turn to aliens or demons or, you know, does Jesus still live in France? Did he have a wife and kids? All this sort of stuff. So it's not particularly helpful if you're trying to grow a bit deeper in your faith. So we started meeting as a smaller group on a Thursday afternoon, and the boys called it Alpha Plus. So when you finish the Alpha course, you can go a bit deeper. And it's really just a discipleship group. And some of them had sort of struggled to know how to get into the Bible. They had made decisions to follow Jesus, but they were a bit confused or overwhelmed by this Bible. And an encouraging thing for us that we discovered, there were so many resources to be able to help people who feel like that. One of the main ones we started using was called the Action Bible. Has anyone seen the Action Bible? It's like a graphic novel, so it's like a comic, which picks out some of the main passages in the Bible. So a lot of the boys in prison struggled with literacy, and they really that would just put them off the Bible or Bible studies altogether. But once we got hold of the Action Bible, we found there were people actually coming to faith through using this. So if you can get your hands on one, it's absolutely brilliant. I love reading it as well. So it's Bible stories in a kind of an action comic format. And it's not just for kids either. It's really useful. The Bible Society has a course which we were able to get on DVD, and it comes with booklets, and it goes through the Bible from start to finish, explaining what each section is, what each book represents, how it was written, why it was written, who it was written by, things like that. And it's about a six-part series, and having a lot of people are visual learners. You know, me standing talking to them wouldn't really help. Nothing would go in. But having the DVD of explaining what each part of the Bible was has been incredibly helpful. Another one is the Bible Project. Has anyone seen the Bible Project? They're all for free on YouTube, these Bible Projects. They're absolutely incredible, animated little short videos on biblical themes. So it's a group in America that do them, and Karis emailed them and said, listen, obviously we can't get YouTube in the prison. Any chance you could, like, their DVDs exist? And they posted them over to us. We were the first people in Britain to have them and the first people to use them in a prison. And it's been such a huge success, hasn't it? So they go through biblical themes. One that really hit home was on the Messiah. If you get a chance when you get home, go on the internet and look at the Bible Project Messiah, and it explains what that means. Who was the Messiah? What is a Messiah? And it really was helpful for the lads. And the one we've been doing recently, which has been probably the most fun, on our Thursday group with probably about 10 guys who come along who are going a bit deeper in their faith, is a series called AD, The Bible Continues. Now, it was on, I think it was on Netflix, and it was a big budget American production of the book of Acts, starting at the resurrection of Jesus and continuing through the early church and following the life of the apostles in Jerusalem. And it's like watching some kind of incredible drama series. It's got the interaction between the Romans and the Jewish council and then the early church trying to exist in the midst of that. And what we do is we get the Bible and we hold it open in the book of Acts and we follow it through as we're watching an episode of this show. And we pause it and we say, hold on, what about that? Did Peter actually say that? No, he didn't say that. Well, what did he mean? And they've represented this bit a bit strange. What do you think the Bible actually means in this? And it's been brilliant. And people have fallen in love with the book of Acts. And it's really helped me as well. So I suggest you check out the AD, the Bible Continued, as well. The second thing, apply it. Discipleship is what we're interested in. It's all about helping each other work out how to walk as a follower of Jesus. That's sort of one of my kind of interpretations of what discipleship is. How do we walk as a follower of Jesus when the storms do come along? And we noticed very clearly in the prison that there were a lot of issues and themes that were coming up time and time again. And we were getting to know a lot of the people in prison very well. We would sit down and have one-to-ones with them, and we found that we were having a lot of the same conversations over and over again. Things like forgiveness, obviously that's a big one. Excuse me. A big question, a part of that was, is it possible to actually forgive someone when they're not sorry? You know, that is going to be very difficult for us in our lives, but if you've been through the criminal justice system, that's probably even more relevant. Is it possible to forgive someone when they aren't sorry? Also, when you're not able to speak to them anymore, maybe they didn't have access to this person or weren't allowed to have access to this person, how could they work out forgiveness with that individual? Another issue was broken relationships, especially with children and ex-partners. Revenge. What does the Bible say about revenge? What would Jesus say about revenge? Making money and desiring to live a flash lifestyle. I find that's one of the hardest things for people to let go of, especially we work with a lot of drug dealers who were quite successful and were used to driving Range Rovers and having, you know, a fresh tracksuit every day and new trainers every week. And for them to have that taken away and to realize, okay, what does the Bible say about that lifestyle that I became very accustomed to? It's been interesting to walk through that stuff with them. Another one, how to navigate the criminal justice system. How to respond to prison officers who abuse you or treat you badly. What does the Bible say about that? And I think it's not right to just throw a Bible verse at someone who's trying to deal with these things, especially something like forgiveness or a broken relationship. It's heavy stuff. And it sort of cheapens the relationship to me when you just hit someone around the head with a couple of Bible verses. And it takes away from the real, genuine hope that the gospel has. We actually, I believe, need to go and sit with people when they're in the dark, or in these really dark situations, and talk it through with them and open the word together. That's what I mean when I say apply it. Which leads on to my third point, is talk about it. We need to talk about the Bible. Because people are going to struggle with it. It can be overwhelming at times. Scripture can confuse people, and that's fine. I want to bring Karis up to share a couple of stories about people that we've been doing this with recently in particular, where she's opened up the Bible and applied that to their lives.
Thank you. Still on my tiptoes, aren't I? So as Luke said, we run this group on a Thursday afternoon. And a couple of stories from that. So the guys who got baptized this week, our Thursday session that we did with them was to do with actually basically about this, the storms of life, and how particularly after you get baptized, you can often just get hit with a whole load of stuff, and how do you prepare yourself for that in this new decision that you've made. So before we had an episode of the Bible AD thing that Luke explained, but before we did that, we basically opened it up at Ephesians and looked at the armor of God and went through it line by line and talked about, okay, what is the belt of truth? You know, what is the feet that are fitted with the gospel of peace? What does this actually practically mean? And how can we practically apply that in the week? And it was really incredible, wasn't it? It was things and words that even they hadn't actually ever really considered. I mean, they'd been baptized, but when we said to them, what does righteousness mean? You know, they were like, actually, I don't actually know what that means. And so to be able to go back and actually talk about this word righteousness that appears all over the Bible, like, how do we actually unpack that? What does it mean? And what does it mean for you? And do you know that you are now a righteous man because you've been baptized, because your faith is in Jesus? And that was totally mind-blowing to them, and was a really beautiful moment. So it's really cool to be able to do that. And the other story to share from this week is that one of the guys who's been coming to that group, he is a very new believer. He's not ready to be baptized yet. Church is completely new to him. He's never been in church his whole life. And he only started coming when he was in prison, and he started coming in Pentonville. And he's a guy who is one of these Class A drug dealers, so he is used to only shopping in Harrods. I mean, he would tells us stories of these things that he's bought in Harrods, and he won't shop anywhere else. And he's very used to this lifestyle and will find it very difficult to leave it behind if it comes to it. But I had a really beautiful moment with him this week where he couldn't come to the group because he was having a visit from the mother of his child, who's a woman that he had just had a one-night stand with, and he didn't know her at all, and he also didn't know this child at all. And the woman had been bringing the child to the visit, and he was saying to me, you know, I can't go there, I can't even look at this child, I can't be a dad, like, I just don't want anything to do with them. And it was amazing to be able to talk about what that means. And obviously he was self-preservation, you know, he's in prison, he can't afford to allow himself to feel because of the pain that will come from allowing himself to feel and acknowledging that he's separated from this baby. And I said to him, okay, just try one thing this week on the visit. Just ask her, the mother of his child, just ask her one question, because usually she comes and she comes with his mum, and he just ignores her. He just talks to his mum and ignores her. And I said, just ask her one question, just, you know, ask what the baby's interested in at the moment. And he said, okay, I'll try that. And knew that he was going to have to open himself up to this moment. And he said, I'll come and let you know how it went. And he came up after the visit, and he was, oh, his face, it was so sad. He was like, it was the worst thing I've ever done. I should never have done it. And he basically was really crestfallen because he'd asked the question, but he'd also allowed himself to hold the child, and obviously the child cried when he held her because she didn't recognize him. She doesn't know who he is. And he was heartbroken that this child had cried in his arms and had taken it really personally. But then we were able to sit down and look at what has happened in that moment where he's opened himself up and he's allowed himself to feel, and how that's what Jesus does in us when we open ourselves up, and we have to be brave and we have to allow ourselves to feel, and then we have to give it to Jesus and we have to give him the authority and we have to lay down at his feet. And we spent some time praying together, and it was just one of those, I don't know if you've ever prayed with someone and you finish praying and neither of you open your eyes, because the presence of God is so thick, you know, you just sort of sit there for a minute. And that's what it was like with him. And he said, I'm so curious, I'm so intrigued by all of you, I'm so intrigued by all of this stuff. And so hopefully he'll just keep coming back, but it's an honor to be able to walk that journey with him.
So to finish, that's my encouragement for all of us this morning is, you know, don't be afraid to open the Bible. People often, we can be intimidated to have all the right answers, and we don't feel prepared for people's questions or doubts or fears. But get creative with it. There's so many amazing resources out there. And you might not be someone who's a particularly academic or, you know, theological person, but that's fine. Just get into the stories of Jesus together and read them with people and talk about them together and say, what does this mean to me? And it's really exciting. You can end up in some pretty interesting places. So thanks very much.